Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello, welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty Podcast with me, Rich Cooling. I'm back with another solo podcast for you today. Hope you enjoyed Murph coming on last week. Certainly going to have some more guests coming on later in January and early into February. Got a lot of the guys that you know and love from the 5 Yard family are going to be joining us. But today, I just wanted to, I guess, look back at kind of the 2020 season as a whole and start to have an approach of what lessons can we learn and kind of, I guess, who the easiest way to start is who's risen in value, who's dropped in value, and potentially can we learn anything from those kind of drastic value changes. So today I'm going to look at the positive. We're going to be focusing on seven guys that saw a significant rise in their value. And then next week we'll take the negative approach and start looking at guys that saw a huge decline in terms of their value overall. So to give you kind of an idea, I'm taking Dynasty League Football, so DLF, they produce monthly ADP. So these are probably the seven guys that, based on their ADP from August to January, saw the largest kind of value changes. And hopefully each one is kind of noteworthy in their own individual way. So the first guy is going to be the only guy at the quarterback position, and that's Justin Herbert. So in August ADP, he was actually the QB25, and then his current ADP is QB5 overall, which is mind-blowing. So in terms of his kind of 2020 stats, so he was the QB9 in overall kind of fantasy points scored. Obviously, that's slightly lower than his actual performance, because obviously he was a little bit late starting the season, but he finished as the QB8 in terms of points per game, averaging 22.9 points per game. That's pretty impressive, because obviously Dak's ridiculous number for the first 5 or 6 weeks is included in that. So, you know, he was a really solid QB1 for you pretty much all year. In terms of his contract, so obviously he's on that 4-year contract with the potential 5th-year option, and he's only in year 2 of that. So he's going to be in, almost at San Diego there, in Los Angeles for at least another 4 years. I guess what lessons can we learn? So going into both the NFL draft and rookie drafts, he was the consensus QB3 in both formats. I think there was some late hype that he could potentially go to Miami as the QB2 off the board. But I think realistically, people throughout the whole kind of pre-draft process were projecting him as that QB3. And certainly in fantasy circles, he was, you know, it was Tua and Herbert and Burrow were being talked about as, you know, your first and second pick overall in Superflex drafts. And Herbert was being talked about sort of as a mid to late first round pick. And I just think that this really, to me, shows that when it comes to the quarterback position, we don't really have a clue in terms of rookies coming out. You know, you look at the year before, Daniel Jones obviously was highly drafted by the Giants. He was, again, a late first, early second round rookie pick in Superflex drafts and immediately shot up boards and was being valued much higher than that this time last year. So I just think that maybe we need to be taking the approach in those Superflex drafts of basically any quarterback that is going to start is going to see an uptick in value based on what you pay for them in a rookie draft. You look at even someone like Tua, who obviously had an up and down year, didn't perform at the level that people expected, but is still going in startups as the kind of QB10, QB11, QB12 off the board. And you can probably still get a couple of firsts for him in a trade. Someone like Justin Herbert is probably priced now around sort of 3 future firsts. Well, if you drafted him at 108, 109, where he was going this time last year, and you can now turn that round into 3 firsts in the space of 3 months, you know, that's an incredible return on investment. And I just think that basically my advice is that you can never have enough quarterbacks in Superflex leagues, but particularly the value of rookie quarterbacks is, you know, in all seriousness, very much likely to return on that investment. We talk about first round running backs in rookie drafts being sort of a 50-50 proposition, in that, you know, half the time they're going to not produce that RB1, RB2 type season. But quarterbacks are, you know, unless they come out like Jared Goff did in his rookie year, they're pretty much kind of proof of that value drop. So I think they're a really good buying thing. So if you've got that opportunity to take a quarterback in your rookie draft, even if you don't necessarily need a quarterback, let's still really consider it, because in terms of pure value, they're likely to return on that investment much greater than a running back or a wide receiver. In terms of overall, I guess, Justin Herbert, so as I said, he's currently being valued as the QB5 in ADP. He's my QB7. I've just done a new startup where he went at the 106 overall in a startup Superflex league, which I'll be honest, was shocking at the time. Personally, I can't spend a first round pick in terms of my Superflex draft on the guy that's performed well, but performed well in 14 games. You know, I've talked about it on the last pod. This time last year, Carson Wentz was a top seven quarterback. 2 years ago, Baker Mayfield was the QB3 overall after his rookie season. And obviously Marcus Mariota, after his quarterback's rookie season, was the QB2 overall. I'm not saying that Justin Herbert's going to go that way and kind of fall off the face of the earth in terms of his value. I do think he's a very good quarterback. You know, I saw a stat going around on Twitter yesterday that was saying he was actually had the highest number of under pressure throws in terms of the NFL last year, and led the league in completion percentage on those. So I think he, you know, if he continues to get the help, perhaps gets a new offensively minded head coach that can bring in a new system and can really be an absolute superstar moving forward. But I just, as I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm cautious about projecting age when it comes to quarterback position. I think when it comes to running backs, wide receivers, I completely get it, because, you know, the shelf life of a top tier running back is kind of 4 years. The shelf life of a top tier quarterback could be 15 years. I don't get why we're so quick throwing away the likes of Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, people like that, who you can get for a fifth of the value, a fifth of the price of Herbert, yet are going to produce probably not to the level that Herbert will over the next 2-3 years, but pretty darn close. But if you can get two firsts of Matt Stafford for Herbert, I'm very comfortable making that deal at the moment. So absolutely love him if you've got him on your roster. But I'm probably not going out and buying him, potentially even looking at selling him if I can get, you know, 106 in a startup value for him. That's, you know, if I can get Saquon Barkley plus for Justin Herbert, then I'm very interested in that. So moving across to the running back position. So no shocks to you guys who this is going to be. So that's James Robinson. So obviously, in August, he was actually undrafted in terms of ADP over at DLF. So they tend to go about 200 to 250 players deep. So the fact he wasn't even in that shows how low his value was. He's now currently being valued as the RB10 overall. So in terms of stats last year, so he finished as the RB7. He was actually the RB6 in terms of points per game, averaging 17.9. Obviously, he missed the last few weeks due to injury. In terms of his contract situation, so he is signed a 3-year deal as an undrafted free agent. So he's actually only going to make 780K in 2021, and will be a restricted free agent in 2023. So I guess the big question mark about James Robinson is, you know, can we learn anything from his kind of huge kind of meteoric rise in terms of his value? And it's difficult to sit here and say, yeah, you know, we should go out and buy every undrafted free agent that signs to a situation that could be a great one. But, you know, with the greatest will in the world, we're not going to be able to identify the next James Robinson. Anyone who says they can is a liar, because if you could identify the next James Robinson, he wouldn't be going undrafted. But what I do kind of think back to is something that a guy that I really rate in terms of JJ Zacharyson preaches, in that when there's an kind of unsettled backfield, in that there's no clear number one, you want to buy as many of those options as possible, but also look at buying the cheapest. As soon as Leonard Fournette was kind of released, we had Divine Ozigbo, we had Raquel Armstead, and we had James Robinson. Well, James Robinson was absolutely the cheapest of those three. So perhaps at that point, you could go out and buy all three, but make sure you're taking those, kind of buying those lottery tickets. I think that, and it's a move that perhaps I regret this time last year, is that I get to this point of the season and I'm thinking, after the rookie draft, I've got my sort of, you know, if it's a 25-man roster, I've got my 25-man roster set. But actually, what I really need is kind of two or three spots at the end of the bench that I can go out and acquire someone like a James Robinson very quickly when something like the Leonard Fournette release happens. So I think that, you know, if we can be viewing our rosters as three or four spots shorter than they actually are, so that you've got that potential to go out and buy somebody or go out and acquire somebody off the waiver wire super quick without having to stress about kind of dropping. I know I ummed and ahed for about 4 hours about whether I should drop DJ Dallas for James Robinson in one league. And I ended up not doing it because I really liked DJ Dallas. I thought that he had the potential to carve out a role in 2021 when Chris Carson had moved on, and I thought that could potentially be an option. But actually, what I should have done is cleared another space on the roster and kept both. I think that certainly at this time of year, if you can take as many punts at running back, it churns so quickly, there is opportunity to buy players that could blow up in value so easily. I think that if we can go out and buy as many late running back picks as possible, and add them to your roster, I think that's a good place to be. In terms of moving forward, so he is, as I said, RB10 price. To me, I'm a little bit nervous paying that. He's my RB14 overall in my rankings. I'm a little bit concerned, not for 2021, but for 2022, if I'm being honest. I think Jacksonville would be silly to go out and acquire a kind of a high-value player, whether that be in free agency or the draft, to compete with him, because he's shown that he can be a workhorse back. You know, he led the league in terms of opportunity share this year. And I just think that he's going to be the workhorse in 2021. But I do worry that that lack of draft capital could affect him in 2022. And for me, in terms of, I think there's, as I said, 13 running backs that have got a more carved out role than he has. So if I've got him, I'm absolutely not selling him, because I think that the price that you'd get for him wouldn't return what he's going to produce over the next year or two. But I wouldn't feel comfortable going out and buying him for essentially what is a second or third round pick in a Superflex startup. So moving on to the wide receiver position. So the first guy, probably no shocks, is DK Metcalf. So in August ADP, he was the wide receiver 14 overall. He's currently the wide receiver 2. Actually, in November, December, he was the wide receiver 1. I think he was the second overall pick at one point. So he was the wide receiver 7 this year in terms of his production. In terms of a points per game, so he was wide receiver 10, producing 17 points a game. He's heading into year 3 of his rookie deal, and will be an unrestricted free agent in 2023. So I'll be honest, I was slow to DK Metcalf coming out of the draft. I thought that his route running wouldn't transition to the NFL. I worried that, you know, he was blazing fast on those 9 routes and the comebacks and kind of drags across the field. But I worried that he wouldn't have the nuance to consistently get open in the NFL. Well, I mean, that's been proved wrong, because basically he doesn't need to be nuanced. He's bigger and faster than pretty much anyone in the league, so he can just kind of bully his way to get open or blaze past people. What I would say is that I think this is a rule in kind of a nutshell that's going to encompass the next guy I'm going to talk about as well. But I think that wide receivers coming off their rookie season that have produced that aren't yet being valued as, you know, truly elite options are fantastic buy candidates. I think you look at people like this year, so CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins, I think they're kind of being valued in that late kind of, I guess, 8 to sort of 16 range in terms of where they're being ranked and where they're being valued. at the wide receiver position. And I just think that those are the kind of guys that could quite easily be in this DK Metcalf, AJ Brown tier in a year's time. So if you can get in early, because the price is only going to go up, is kind of my thought there. Which then brings me to the next guy, which is Terry McLaurin. So again, his ADP in August was wide receiver 21. His current ADP is wide receiver 10. So in terms of production, so he was the wide receiver 20, both overall and in points per game, averaging 14.9. So I guess for McLaurin, you know, the price hasn't kind of shot up to the levels of DK Metcalf, and the production, you know, he was a top 20 receiver this year, but he wasn't a top 10 receiver. But I think for me, the thing you've got to remember with Terry McLaurin is that he's done that with Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen, Alex Smith on one leg, and Tyler Heineke as his quarterbacks this year. Now, I don't know if Washington's going to be able to go out and acquire a, you know, an elite quarterback, whether that be in free agency, via trade, or in the draft. But whoever they have playing quarterback next year is going to be an upgrade. And I just think that this is a guy that has already seen that kind of rise in value and could potentially return that quite easily if he gets an upgrade at quarterback. Lessons to learn, exactly the same as I said with DK Metcalf. You know, this is a guy that produced as a rookie and was coming in and still probably being valued a little bit too low. So if we can look at some potential guys coming off their rookie years that could produce kind of next year, again, it's the same guys. It's CeeDee Lamb, it's T. Higgins, it's even someone like LaVisca Chenault or Denzel Mims. I think that year two receiver is kind of where they blow up. You know, we used to talk 5 years ago about being that third year breakout for receivers, but I think it's very much now that year two breakout as such. And then the next guy I'm going to talk about, so this is Stephon Diggs. So in August, he was the wide receiver 25 in ADP. He's currently being valued as the wide receiver 11. That is despite being the wide receiver 3, both overall and in points per game, putting up a remarkable 20.5 points per game. So the reason he was being valued so low, I guess, is this old kind of adage of anyone who kind of moves, any wide receiver who moves team in free agency or via trade doesn't produce the same level unless they're seeing a clear uptick in target volume or target quality or quarterback play. And I guess you could project that with Stephon Diggs. He, coming out of, you know, a target heavy role in Minnesota, was he going to see an uptick in target volume? Probably not. Was he going to see an upgrade in quarterback play at the time? Probably not, you know. And the answer is that he's exceeded on both of those. But I also think that when we talked about guys moving in free agency and in trade, we've never really seen those true elite guys do it. This year, we've obviously sort of seen Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins, and both have absolutely produced in their new settings. And I think that whilst, you know, the likes of a mid-tier receiver that could be moving position might see that kind of year to kind of adjust, I'm not sure we can be kind of valuing an elite receiver in that same world. So I just think that if we see a big trade, or indeed, you know, a lot of these big name guys, someone like an Allen Robinson, Juju Smith-Schuster, someone like that, move in free agency this year, let's not just discount them because they've moved. Because I think that, you know, someone like Allen Robinson, he could still produce like a wide receiver one next year in his new setting, despite changing team, which is, you know, in theory supposed to see a reduction in terms of his fantasy production. The final receiver that I'm going to talk about is going to be Robbie Anderson. So he was the wide receiver 63 in August. He's currently the wide receiver 44. That's despite being the wide receiver 19 overall and the wide receiver 29 in terms of points per game, putting up an average of 14 points per game. I guess this links to kind of the Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins comments of we devalued him because he was with moving role, moving team. But I also think that people saw him in what was a bad Jets offense as just a deep threat. You know, I talked about in the offseason last year of he was actually much better than that. And I think you needed to watch the Jets in order to see that. And unfortunately, I was in that position where I watched the Jets an awful lot. And I think that he was kind of a victim of poor offense and poor quarterback play. So I guess there's kind of two lessons to learn here is that one, if a guy's leaving a bad offense and a bad quarterback, he could potentially see a value tick and it's, you know, going to what is a good offense like Carolina. Let's take that into consideration. But I also think the second lesson, which is probably the bigger lesson, is follow the money. So this is a guy that's signed a 2-year, $20 million deal in free agency. He was pretty much sought after. There was a few teams going after him. And I think that, you know, teams aren't stupid in that they're paying up for this guy, yet in fantasy we weren't at all. And I think that sometimes we overthink ourselves and we think that we know more than the NFL teams. But actually, if they're valuing him as a top 25 receiver, which is what his contract says, and we're valuing him as a wide receiver 60 plus, there's some sort of disconnect there. And I think that he went into an offense where he had some incredible competition in terms of a young stud like DJ Moore, a guy that was a, you know, 100 plus target receiver last year in Curtis Samuel. And we were still undervaluing him in the 60s. And he's turned around a wide receiver 2 season for you this year. And I think that, you know, we need to learn that lesson of let's look at potential guys that could sign in free agency that we could still be undervaluing. And I guess the guy that I'm looking at for this is someone like a Corey Davis, who's being valued currently in the wide receiver 40 range. If he went to, I know I keep saying it, but Green Bay to be the wide receiver 2 there, he'd have an incredible opportunity to outperform what he did even this year. Even if he re-signs in Tennessee, could he produce similar numbers to this year as the wide receiver 2 in that offense and still be undervalued next year? Quite possibly. But I just think let's follow the money and kind of see potentially where that takes us. And then at the wide receiver position, so again, not shocked here. I guess the kind of obvious guy was Robert Tonyan. So in August ADP, he was undrafted again. So outside that sort of top 250, he's currently the tight end 11. He actually produced as the tight end 4 overall this year, but was the tight end 6 in points per game, averaging 11 points per game. Well, you know, he kind of came from nowhere. I think a lot of people were projecting that role in terms of the tight end in Green Bay as being a potential fantastic fantasy option, but people were looking at Jake Sternberger as the guy who was going to do it. He was being, you know, drafted in that tight end 15 to 20 range as a potential breakout. And we missed on the wrong guy in that offense. And I do wonder if, you know, it's difficult with the tight end position because there's only sort of 12, 15 guys that are relevant, despite there being 32 of them in the NFL. But we can kind of identify the offenses that are going to have a potential relevant tight end because it's the good offenses. It's the offenses that score a lot of points. You know, the thing that buoyed Robert Tonyan this year was he scored a lot of touchdowns. Well, you know, could we identify another offense next year that's not got a clear tight end, but is a good offense that doesn't have a lot of options, that scored a lot of touchdowns, that could be another situation to find someone like Robert Tonyan next year. So I do wonder if, you know, and we could take this with the wide receiver position, do we need to be looking at those, what we consider are going to be good offenses that don't have 3-4 solid fantasy options? And should we just be buying a lot of guys in that offense that are essentially cheap? Because, you know, Robert Tonyan 3 months ago was free. So can we go out and buy some cheap options in that offense that could then see a huge kind of uptick in value? So it's something to, again, think about. Let's, you know, keep an eye, see if we can identify some of those gaps over the next few months and through the off season that could then return huge booms on kind of value next year. In terms of Robert Tonyan moving forward, so he is a restricted free agent at the moment. He's likely to be re-signed by Green Bay. I can't imagine they let him walk. To be honest, at tight end 11, I'm okay with that. I certainly wouldn't pay anything more than that. I certainly wouldn't be going out and buying him. I think was, as I said, hugely touchdown reliant this year. And I'd be quite concerned that if those touchdowns go away, he's basically a waste of the position. So if I was buying a tight end, I certainly wouldn't be buying someone like a Robert Tonyan. I'd instead go and buy another guy that was cheap and is now not, in terms of Logan Thomas. I think he had much better peripheral numbers in terms of targets, target share, yards, that kind of thing, and wasn't so touchdown reliant, but produced at a similar rate. So that is it for this week's podcast. So next week, we're going to come back with some guys that saw some significant drops in value. And see if we can learn some lessons from that. So thank you again for listening. If you could follow myself, I'm at Dynasty Island on Twitter, but also we've launched the 5 Yard Dynasty Twitter page, so give that a follow. That's at 5 Yard Dynasty, and I will speak to you all again next week.